We are still in Luke. Last week, Tad did a great job walking us through a very important passage. I hope if you were not here last week that you'll take the time to listen to it. Forgiveness and all the things that are woven into it are so powerfully needed for us to hear and obey. But today, for some of you, today could be a life-changing day. Some of you might leave in 45 minutes or so, healed. God has the power to do that, and He might just choose to do so today. Others of you who are here and are on that side of God's wrath and enemies may have the gift of leaving changed, leaving a friend of God. Still others may be given a wonderful gift from God, and that's a better understanding of who He is and how He works. Because that, at the foundational level, is what motivates all of our lives. Whatever you think about God is the most important thing that you think. So, this could be a big day, and it's going to be a big day, I think, in a passage that if you've sat through a church service more than once or twice, you've probably heard. But there's a lot in it, and so much more than I had seen prior to really studying it in depth. So, if you would, turn with me to Luke chapter 17, if you have a Bible. If you don't, there's a scripture that'll be on the screen, and when you leave today, there's some Bibles in the patio. Please take one. Those are our gift to you. We want everybody to have a copy of the scripture that they can read. Luke 17, we're going to pick it up in verse 11. Luke 17, 11. On the way to Jerusalem, this is Jesus, was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. Luke is constantly giving us clues and pointing us to the fact that this is a real story. It happened in a real place. These are destinations you can go to today. So this is historical fact that we're reading, and Luke is careful to anchor it there for us. Jesus is continuing to take his journey from the northern part of Israel down to Jerusalem, where he will eventually be crucified. Along the way, a lot of stuff continues to happen, and today we're going to see something really cool. Verse 12, as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance. So, Jesus is just walking place to place to place, and he comes across a group of people called leopards. Let's take a few minutes and talk about leprosy. I was going to show you some pictures. I did some research and found some really old, ancient pictures of people with leprosy. They were literally so disgusting that I decided I could not show them. So, I thought you might have nightmares. I mean, literally, the way people look that have leprosy is absolutely heartbreaking. So, I'll do my best to describe it to you, because I didn't think you could stomach actually seeing it. Okay? So, let's talk first about the physical aspects of having leprosy. Leprosy was, it doesn't exist anymore, it was a slowly progressing, highly, highly, highly feared, incurable disease. There are things like leprosy today. There's a disease that's related to it, but the form that we see in the Bible is not around anymore. This disease was the thing you most feared coming down with if you were a person alive in the first century. A bacteria would come and would spread over your skin, and it would create sores and scabs and eventually white spots on your skin. And that's just what you could see. Okay, that's just what the person looking at you would notice. Underneath the surface of the skin, what came with leprosy was the loss of sensation in any area where you had the disease. So that means you literally got where you couldn't feel. Now that sounds kind of cool, doesn't it? I mean, you can smash your finger with a hammer and you don't know it. That's pretty cool. But the long-term ramifications of this are not good at all. Because if you can't feel something, then you begin to injure it, you begin to walk weird, you begin to use your hands weird, and eventually what happens is you're deformed, and things don't heal, and you can bleed out. There's stories of people with leprosy having so far gone in their hand that they might lay in bed at night, their hand fall off the bed, and some kind of rodent eat their finger off, and they'll never know it. So, This was not something you wanted to come down with. It was common for people to lose fingers and toes if they had leprosy. Incurable, doesn't go away. All right, that's just the physical aspects of leprosy. The emotional, spiritual, and physical may be even worse. If you had leprosy, you were quarantined for the rest of your life. Leviticus 13 tells us this. The leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head hang loose. He shall cover his upper lip and cry out, "Unclean! Unclean!" And he shall remain unclean for as long as he has the disease. He's unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. So the leper was not only sick and in pain, he or she was an outcast. And if you were unclean, do you know what that meant? That didn't just mean you smelled funny or you hadn't taken a shower recently. This was a technical term meaning you can't go to church. You cannot be around other people. You are shunned and despised. So you lived outside the camp if you were a leper, but let's say you had to go into town to get something. Well, nobody wanted to come anywhere near you, so you had to essentially wear a big neon sign that says, "Stay 100 feet away." I mean, that was the effect of them wearing the clothes they wore, the hair, and then crying out, "Unclean! Unclean!" Talk about shame. Talk about fear. And then imagine you're part of a large network, a large family, and you have to leave them. And for the rest of your life, the only people you're around are other folks who have leprosy too. So you would go days, weeks, months, years with no physical touch. Now for some of you that sounds really cool because you like a personal space of about 30 feet all around you. All right, you're the bubble boy. But human touch is something we need. It's a part of God's design for us as people. So imagine going years with no touch, no embrace from a loved one, no sex with a spouse, no pat on the back from a friend, no handshake from a coworker, no high five from a teammate, no wrestling with your kids, absolutely no touch. Think of what that would be like. Complete banishment. Imagine emotionally, spiritually, physically, how you would feel on top of having leprosy. Lepers were called the living dead. And you can see why. So Jesus is taking this journey. He's walking and then all of a sudden he hears, "Unclean! Unclean!" And he looks and he notices 10 disgusting, ragged, sick people. What's he going to do? Well, let's find out. Verse 12. As he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance, lifted up their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourself to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed. Now, Jesus tells the lepers, "Go see the priests." That seems kind of strange, doesn't it? I mean, these lepers would have heard all about Jesus. They would have heard of his power. They would have heard of his teachings. They would have heard of the unique position that he held. They would have heard of other people that he had healed. So they'd probably been waiting around, hoping this uniquely powerful man would cross their path. Why? They wanted a shot at this too, right? So here's the big moment. They see Jesus. They cry out to him. They beg, "Would you heal me?" And what does he do? Go show yourself to the priest. It seems weird, doesn't it? He tells them, "Yeah, I see you, but you turn around and just go show yourself to the priest." And they're just supposed to do that. So they're supposed to head to the priest without having anything happen to them. Am I the only one in the room that thinks that seems really bizarre? You gotta learn to read the Bible like a real story, like this stuff actually happened. Imagine that you've wanted to ask Jesus for something that you know he could do, but you had to see him. You had to talk to him. And so that moment comes after you've yearned and longed and hoped, and he just says, go see the priest. What in the world is going on here? Well, let me do a little backstory to help you understand. In this time period, if you were a leper, you were set out from society. Your only way back in was if a priest inspected you and saw that you'd been healed. Now, I've got to tell you, I'm really, really, really happy that's not part of my job description. I don't want to be looking at your nappy skin saying if you can come to church. But the priests back then, that's something they had to do. It was part of the protection for the whole body of people. So Jesus says, go show yourself to the priest. He's saying, go to the priest like it tells you in Leviticus 14. Let him find out if you're healed. But what had not happened? He hadn't healed them. He'd sent them away without them being healed. There's no healing. But here's the interesting thing. As they obeyed God, then they were healed. Do you ever feel like God tells you to do absolutely ridiculous things? I mean, do you ever read something in the Bible and think, there's no stinking way God actually expects me to believe that, to think like that, to act like that, to do that, to stop that? Do you ever have that kind of reaction? If you don't, you're not reading it. Because it's going to tell you all kinds of stuff that you're commanded to do that you don't want to do. Because you still battle with a mind that's not yet fully sanctified, that's not yet complete in what God would want you to do. So, if we're honest, we've all been there. And at times, Jesus says, just go show yourself to the priest. And we're supposed to take it by faith. But the lepers were healed as they obeyed Jesus. And that is so rich with meaning and life and application for us. Is there something in your life today that you would like God to heal? Maybe it's a physical ailment. Maybe you've got a broken heart over something that's happened to you. Maybe you're wrecked with guilt and shame over something you've done. Maybe you've really blown it with your finances and they're just an utter mess. You have no idea how you're going to pay your next bill. Maybe your marriage seems beyond hope. You've become roommates, and not very good ones. Maybe you have a relationship that's fractured, that you'd really love to see God put back together. I could list things on and on and on and on, and if I didn't list yours, I'm sorry. Do you have something that you would love to see Jesus heal? Probably all of us do. God doesn't promise that life will be easy. Nor does he promise that every healing we ask for in this life will come about. But he has the power to act. He can do it. If he chooses to, in his grace and mercy and in his plan, say yes, that is all it takes. Do you believe that? He can do that. He can choose to heal. And he very well may do so today. But the connection we've got to make here is that the dramatic, miraculous activity of God in our lives is dependent in part on our faith and obedience. It's often as we ask God for something, and then he tells us, do this, that then God will act. That can be as simple as just the act of asking. Some of you have stuff messed up in your life that you want God to heal, but you're scared to ask. And so you haven't even obeyed in the asking. It can be just that. But do you desire to be healed? Do you want to see the mighty hand of God come and meet your deepest need? Do you want that? Well, we believe he may choose to move miraculously today. And we're going to give you an opportunity to respond in a little bit. But what happens then? So the 10 go. They're headed towards the priests. Somewhere along the way, in their obedience to Jesus, they're healed. Boom, gone. The leprosy is completely removed. Imagine that moment, watching your disgusting skin become normal. Wouldn't that be incredible? In an instant, absolutely amazing. So 10 of them look down and they see this. And what happens? Verse 15. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. And if we could infuse music into the Bible at this moment, then what you would have is this rink, 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 rink right here, okay? Because it says, now he was a Samaritan. So, 9 Jews and 1 Samaritan come to Jesus begging to be healed. 9 of them were supposed to know the stories of God, to have been God's people, to walk with God, to love God. One of them was considered a complete spiritual outcast and loser. The absolute last person you'd ever expect to worship God in a right way. 10 head out. 10 get healed. 9 Jews keep on running. They could care less. One that would have been despised, one that we would say isn't welcome here, one went back. And what did he do? What do you see him doing? Fell on his face. What else? He gave thanks. What does it mean to fall on your face before God? That's that happens many, many, many times in the Bible. What does that express? Confesses deep humility, deep brokenness, deep, you just did something I can't do. You're way bigger than I am. Sheer amazement at Jesus. That's what he does. He falls there in wonder and expresses deep, deep, deep gratitude. My friends, gratitude should be the fundamental posture of a Christian's life. It should be the grid through which we look at everything. Anyone who has experienced God's gracious work should recognize their unworthiness of being blessed by Him and just be overcome with gratitude. Gratitude is expressed in humility, in falling before Jesus, in glorifying God, in crying out to Him, in being obedient to Him. I got to ask you, when was the last time you expressed gratitude to God like that? Can you even remember? Now, if you're here today and you're not a Jesus follower, we wouldn't have expected you to. That's okay. We hope and pray that one day you'll get there. But for those of you that have already crossed that line and said, I believe, I follow Jesus, then when was the last time you were just utterly broken and amazed at what He's done in your life? I fear that rather than gratitude, we can be marked by ingratitude, by a sense of entitlement, by voices that don't speak gratitude, they speak discouragement and disappointment. And we say things like, I don't like my life. Things are too hard. This didn't turn out the way I thought it was going to. God hasn't been good to me. Who is He not to be good to me? He hasn't kept His promises. If He was good, I wouldn't be suffering. If the church were a worthwhile place, then I wouldn't get hurt when I go there. And on and on and on and on. It's far more common for our speech to sound like that than it is to be that one Samaritan leper. How can this be? How does that happen? It shouldn't be that way, right? My dear friend, if you are saved, if the eternal, holy, righteous God now looks upon you and says, you are my child. I love you. You're accepted. You never have to fear hell. I'm always with you. And then if God does not a single other thing in your entire life, shouldn't that be enough to motivate eternal gratitude. It should. Does that gratitude of the leper, does that describe your heart? In this story, it only marked 10% of them. Wouldn't it be amazing to have a church where we could say that marks 100% of us? Now, how did Jesus respond to this one, only one, that came back? Well, check it out. Verse 17. Then Jesus answered, "Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Do you hear the pain? Do you hear the rejection of God there? The shunning of Jesus? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" And he said to him, "Rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well." Here's the punch to this entire story. It's not 10 lepers were healed. It's easy to read this story and get only that. And that's pretty amazing, pretty cool, but it's not the point. Here's the point. 9 lepers, 9 Jewish lepers, were healed. 1 Samaritan leper was healed and saved. All of them had a kind of faith. All of them had a kind of trust in Jesus. But not the same. And so the results were dramatically different. Let me see if I can explain. The leper, the Samaritan leper, returned and he glorified God. He came and he thanked Jesus. He showed sheer amazement and wonder at what God had done for him. One man humbled himself. So one man, we see, demonstrated a changed, repentant heart. So that one, and one only, was given not just physical healing. He was given spiritual healing too. He moved from, like that song talked about, being an enemy of God to being a friend of God. From being an object of God's wrath to being an object of God's great pleasure. Now, friends, if you let that sink in deeply, I hope it does 2 things to you. And I hope they're equally strong. First, I hope it does this. The wonder and awe of a man who was healed and returned to thank Jesus should motivate us to live with that kind of gratitude. Because again, if he does nothing else for you other than save you, that's far greater than being cured of disease. Diseases last moments, even horrible ones. Eternity lasts forever. So it should motivate and well up within us great gratitude and praise to God that would mark the very posture of our hearts. But I think it should do a second thing. The ingratitude of the 9 ought to send chills down our spine. They experienced God in their lives, right? They were intimately acquainted with the power of God, right? But in their excitement over these gifts that God had given them, they missed salvation. They missed the most important gift. They looked to the physical healing and they missed what they needed more. They were physically healed but remained spiritually dead. So 10 people experienced a work of faith. They responded obediently to Jesus and found great works of God in their lives. But only one got what he needed the most. Only one was saved. You see, 10 had a kind of trust, a trust that would move them, propel them in desperation to asking God for what only he could do. But only one had the kind of faith that saves. My dear friend, I hope that scares you. Have you experienced God? Have you seen his power in some way in your life? Have you been given some good gift by him? All of those things are what theologians call common grace. That a good God who's benevolent gives good things to all people. not in equal proportionate ways, but we all get more than we deserve. Have you been given those common grace, those gifts of God, that those moments where you've seen Him do something powerful? And yet you've stayed steadfast in your disobedience. You've not come to Him for salvation. Or you've thought that because God kept this bad thing from happening, or He got me through this difficult surgery, or I didn't know where I was going to live and He bailed me out through somebody. The list could go on and on and on. But do you look at that stuff, those good, benevolent things that have happened in your life, and say, then I must be okay? Then God approves of the way I live. This ethic of, if I'm better than somebody else, and that's what God really expects, I guess that's true. That would have been what the 9 Jewish lepers thought. They would have saw absolutely no need to come back and humbly kneel. And if they never did, then that power of God they experienced was cool and amazing, but it was momentary. Because very quickly they died. They would have gone to a place of torment forever that could have been prevented if they would have turned and repented. Now, what does it take to be saved? Well, like the leper, we must bow before Jesus. We must humbly confess sin. We must see the unique person that Jesus is. The kind of thanks that He gave Jesus, nowhere else in the entire Bible is given to anybody else except God. The leper saw who Jesus was, and he responded humbly. Belief in the gospel and turning from sin and humility is what rescues us from the eternal, conscious torment in hell we deserve and grants us joyful life with God instead. So I'd ask you, not just, do you want to be healed today? But I'd ask you, do you need that today? Do you need spiritual rescue? Don't confuse the common goodness of God or even the miraculous hand of God in your life for a secure relationship with Him. If He has not drawn you and you have not repented and put your belief in Him, you are not saved. Jesus still longs for people to come and worship Him. And His response will be to all who come, yes, salvation, you're mine, I forgive you. Arise and go in faith, you're healed. So my friends, Jesus' invitation to you today from this very famous old story is this. First, do you need healing? Is there something in your life that you would love to see the hand of God come and in power fix? Do you want that? Do you believe He can do that? Do you believe if it's in His will, He can change something huge in an instant? If so, in a moment we're going to have some people up here to pray. And we're going to ask you to pray. Come up and pray with us. Now, why would we do it that way? You need to be obedient. James 5 says, if anybody's sick, let him call on the elders of the church. Let them pray. We're going to give you a chance to do that. You're not going to receive a possible blessing from God unless you go. Just like Jesus said, turn and go see the priest. And second, I would ask you, are you one of the 9 lepers? Are you one of the 9 who have experienced good things from God, but you've never submitted yourself to God? If so, then you'll experience the greatest spiritual healing of all. And that's being reborn and given life with God. We can't guarantee physical healing. We can guarantee spiritual healing. Because Jesus says all who come to Him will repent. And all who come, He will not turn away. He knows those who are His. So, the invitation today is, would you come and humbly ask God to heal you? Or would you come and humbly say, I need to be saved? And I firmly believe and have the expectation that God will move today. Because the same Jesus who did that day is the same Jesus alive and well today. And now He uses His Spirit through His people to do the same kinds of works. So would you stand? I'm going to pray. I've asked the staff and leadership team if they would come here to the front. And we will stay till the cows come home if we need to. As many of you that would like to be prayed for and prayed with and talked with, we would love that opportunity.